Can I have this?
So you got a 2-year-old, a 1-year-old, and then a newborn. You get absolutely nice, they're all being the same.
Oh, I hate it when that happens.
Third son.
And you got this pretty colored vegetable.
Yeah, with that picture of Mitch suitable for framing?
Crazy.
I didn't know you were still using your high school graduation picture.
To respond to somebody today.
Everything. Yeah.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, with apologies for my tardiness, with that gavel, I have just convened the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development for the purpose of a public hearing and public testimony on the Oregon Department of Aviation. Today is February the 13th, 2017. I will now open a public hearing on House Bill 5504. And colleagues, out of an abundance of caution, I'm going to declare a potential conflict of interest in that I used to be Mitch, and I, my husband owns an airplane, and I'm a pilot in Oregon, currently subject to regulations of this department. So, Mr. Schwecker, welcome.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Mitch Schwecker. I'm the director of the Department of Aviation.
Mitch, let me stop you. I mean, Mr. Director. Okay, we're calling in technical assistance. One of these screens may work, one of them may not, but the cavalry is being summoned. And I want to turn to our LFO staff to do the introduction to the subject. I just got so excited hearing from you that I got ahead of myself.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members, Gregory Jolivet with the Legislative Fiscal Office. SB 5504, as the chair mentioned, relates to the budget for the Oregon Department of Aviation. The department is supported entirely by other funds and federal funds. It receives all of its other funds from aviation system related fees and taxes. In 2015, in the 2015 session, legislation was enacted to increase taxes and fees to support the aviation system. For the 2017-2019 biennium, there are no issues or concerns with the current service level budget. However, I would note that the department is proposing to abolish pilot registration and the associated fee. There's also a number of capital projects that have been proposed, which is pretty standard for the department. Here today is Mitch Schwecker, the department director, to present. Also here is Linnea Whittakin from the CFO.
Great. With that, welcome, Mr. Director.
Again, for the record, my name is Mitch Schwecker, the director of the Department of Aviation, and I'm here just for an overview of the department per the guidelines from LFO and CFO. And so I'll just talk first about the mission. We are here as an agency that advocates for economic growth, infrastructure improvement, and safety of operations in aviation. And then per the desired outcomes, we really want to see a statewide transportation system that's effective, that promotes transportation. I'm a member of the Oregon Freight Advisory Committee. So expeditious movement of air cargo, and then community commerce here. There's a saying that sure many of us are familiar with, is that businesses locate where there is an airport. They want to know that they can get their just-in-time parts. And then we're also, we own and operate 28 airports, and a lot of those are not economically self-sustaining, but they are used every year for medevacs, firefighting, disaster relief, and would be available in the event of Cascadia, assuming that they survive. And then we'd also like to see a thriving pilot industry and community. As a historical perspective, we're one of the oldest aviation industries or agencies in the country. We predate the FAA going back to 1921. First powered flight was in 1903, and the FAA as we know it today didn't start until 1958. So we've been around for quite a long time, helped to build the system of airports in the state. And the pictures that I have right here is Aurora State Airport back in the 1950s. And then by contrast, there's Aurora State Airport today, which has over 1,000 jobs at that airport, many very prominent industry businesses.
Colleagues, I need to interrupt here because that picture does not do justice to Aurora. On the south end of Aurora, based on private property that is able to come in the arcane nomenclature of aviation through the fence, it's a term of art. It's private property that accesses the main asset of the of the airport, which is the runway. But by virtue of the fact that business has been able to build on its own dirt and use paying through leases, paying to use the runway, there is conservatively $80 million. Am I close, Mitch?
I'd say that's conservative.
Okay. A private investment on the south end of the airport, creating this manifold number of jobs. And the Aurora Airport is the most complex in Mitch's system, and it is one of the growing to be one of the more significant airports in Oregon.
And Chair Johnson, as you're well aware, it is a poster child for through-the-fence operations, for commercial through-the-fence. And it has, for those of you that haven't heard this, most of you have, it has two of the three largest heavy-lift helicopter companies in the U.S. are based there. It has the largest kit-built manufacturer and a number of other businesses, including Life Flight's headquarters there at the Aurora Airport. We have key performance measures. We track eight of them. And of note, one of the things that we will be doing this year is working with Caraggio Group and with the coordination with LFO and CFO, maybe reviewing our key performance measures and make sure that we're measuring the right things. And that will be something that we work on through the summer. I'm going to go through and just quickly walk through our key performance measures here, the eight. One of the things that we look at is the pavement condition. We have a pavement maintenance program in the state where we actually do the contracting for all of the 66 paved airports in the state. We do roughly a third of the state per year. We do an evaluation 1 year with funds from the FAA, and the following year we'll do a contract for that third of the state, roughly dividing it into three separate contracts to try to make it feasible for the small businesses and emerging MWESB type of businesses.
Senator Monroe.
We've had an interesting winter that has caused our streets and highways to crumble in many places and get potholes like I've never seen before. Did the winter have a like effect on runways, or is that just streets and highways?
In Chair Johnson, Senator Monroe, I don't know the answer specifically per individual airport, but I do know that the pavement maintenance program helps to prevent damage to the runways. We do crack sealing to prevent the thaw and freeze cycle from happening. We do an overlay sealant, which helps to preserve that pavement. But I can try to get some individualized information for you on specific airports.
Thank you.
But every 3 years, we're out there doing this pavement maintenance. So you can see by 2016, we're seeing some benefits from that. We did a study funded by the FAA about 3 or 4 years ago, and on average, the life of pavement is extended by 20-plus years by virtue of the pavement maintenance program that we're doing. It's an FAA requirement as well. This program is a kind of a pioneering type of program, and I think we've gotten great benefit from it. We have a key performance measure for the approach glide slope into and out of airports. The 20 to 1 is a standard visual glide slope. And this is something we do statewide. We have our own 28 airports, and we haven't been able to do as much with the non-federally funded airports as we would like to. With the benefits from House Bill 2075 from 2 years ago, we think we're going to be able to knock that down a little bit, but then we also need to work with the other airports in the state to try to keep that 20 to 1 closer to where we would like to see it be. We inspect our airports basically on behalf of the FAA, plus we do our own quarterly inspections. The total possible number of inspections we might do is 140. One of our airports is Hawaii out in the eastern part of the state. You can't get there by anything but boat or air. And so we don't make it there very often, even though it is a state-owned airport.
The good news is the only souls deprived of services there are the rattlesnakes.
Rattlesnakes and the very bold backcountry airport pilots. We always try to make sure we get the best bang for the buck out of the federal funds that we're obligated. We have 12 federally funded airports, actually down to 11. One of them was removed from the program, or at least put on standby in the program because it doesn't have enough based aircraft. We try to make sure that we obligate all of our funding.
Senator Hansel.
Sorry, which one it was removed?
It's Chair Johnson, Senator Hansel, it's Wasco State Airport. There were actually three. The FAA did a study here a couple of years ago and looked at the criteria for being included in what's called the National Plan of Integrated Airport Systems. They took Boardman out, Wasco out, and Seaside out, so that they, if they have a project and they can justify it, they can probably get back in, but those three airports are the ones in the state that were reduced.
Okay, thank you.
Director Schweckert, that causes me to think of something that, to make sure the agency informs the legislators in the districts if there's some change in federal status of their airports, just so that they would know and not be surprised.
And Chair Johnson, I will make sure that I do that. And if you'd like any additional information about that process and how it took place, I'd be happy to.
Senator,
that'd be very helpful since it sounds like two of the three were in my district. So,
yes, sir. I apologize.
And the other one was mine.
Yes, that's more important than one respect.
Please continue.
We do a survey every 2 years, and I'm happy to report that as one of our key performance measures, that our accuracy of information, availability of information, expertise, helpfulness, and timeliness have all been on the upswing here through 2016. Aircraft registration, as you're probably aware, we register aircraft in the state. We use the benefit, or the revenue for our 10% grant match for federally funded airports that we own and operate, the 12 that we do. And we think we're hitting a good percentage of that population of aircraft owners. It's a lot easier than pilot registration, which I'll talk about in just a moment here, because you can actually see the aircraft on the airports, and it's a lot easier to check an N number. For pilot registration, it's not as easy to check. We don't have the ability to, we don't have law enforcement that stops pilots and ask for their license and registration. Nobody pulls over aircraft the way we do automobiles, so it's a little bit tougher to collect. So we have struggled with that. It's not very popular with pilots. We have a bill to abolish that, which I'll talk about just a little bit more. And then our other key performance measure is our Aviation Board best practices. We've had a little bit of a drop-off in 2016 about how we've accommodated the best practices. That's largely because we've had almost a complete turnover of our Aviation Board members over the past year and a half to 2 years. They're all new. The previous board members have all been around for at least 8 years and termed out. This is a summary of our programs. We have operations division, we have a planning division, and we have a number of other programs. Our statewide services, the funding for that supports the operations, the director, our financial and business administration parts. The state airports division operates the 28 airports, licenses and inspects the 97 public use airports, and then we also register 360 plus private airports, and then the pilots and aircraft registration, 4,000 plus of each. And then airport maintenance, we have one full-time maintenance person in 28 airports. We hire a seasonal person, but we put that guy on the road all summer long with the seasonal employee doing mowing. We have some contracts at different places, and we're trying to get more so that we're not doing quite as much travel. We go as far east as Joseph and as far southeast as McDermott for our federally funded airports. Our planning division and our coordinator for that is right behind here. Heather Peck does quite a bit. She does aviation system planning. She also coordinates with counties around land use. We do a tall structures analysis for what they call Part 77 airspace. She's in charge of that program. And then we also do capital improvements, which we'll talk about in a few minutes, for us, for our 12 state-owned federally funded airports, in addition to the other ones that are not federally funded. And then we have a statewide capital improvement program, which was actually requested of us by the FAA a few years ago. And it was going to be a tri-state program, Washington, Idaho, and Oregon. And they actually fund an FTE for our agency. And that program is going very well. We have a tremendously talented gentleman in that position. And then we also, because of the fuel tax increase from 2 years ago, we have the fuel tax grant program that we've divided into three parts. It's provides grants for grant match for federally funded airports around the state. It also can help with Cascadia-related emergency response grants and last economic development grants. And we just recently went through the first cycle. Our aviation board votes on the first cycle of grants, about $1.7 million from that. It's now gone from the Act Review Committee, a member of each act. It goes to the Aviation Board for final vote on March 7th of this year. So very successful. That piece of the grant program actually funded all of the FAA grant match funds, the 10% grant match, plus all of the, assuming that the board votes all the grants in, all of the emergency response grants and two or three of the economic development grants. That's the priority of the grants in the legislature, the statute.
Director Schwecker, may I interrupt you again? I think it's important for new members of the committee to understand, you've mentioned federal participation in grants, to put a finer point on how much the feds pay for and why, when we're talking about the value of projects with Connect, for example, how bountiful the federal match is compared with other federal match.
Chair Johnson, be happy to. So we have 55 airports in the state, actually 57, but two of them don't take federal money, Sun River and Sportsman in Newburgh. The remainder of them get grants at roughly 90% of project costs. For most of them, it's 90. A few of them, it's 95%. So that grant money from both Connect Oregon and the grant program that we have from House Bill 2075 are really funding the 10% and leveraging the 90% federal dollars. And there's been over $300 million in federal grants from the FAA in the past, I think since 2009, if I recall correctly. With Connect Oregon, many modes are actually asking for the entire grant amount, and they're putting up 20% or 30% of their own funding. For aviation projects, a lot of them are only needing the 10% grant match, and the remainder is the federal dollars that they're leveraging, which goes a long way around the state. Part of our House Bill 2075 from 2 years ago, in small and rural communities, if you're doing a $2 million runway renovation project, your 10% grant match is still $200K. And if the airport isn't self-sufficient, then that 10% becomes tough for a small community. So both Connect Oregon and the 2075 program both provide some grant money to make that 10% less likely to come out of maybe the general fund. So it's, in both cases, they're really good programs for aviation and airports, and especially in smaller rural areas. We talked about the pavement maintenance program already. For general aviation entitlements, the federal government gives us a set amount per biennium or per year, and this is the program that comes under GA entitlements. It's 90% FAA funding, 10% other funds, and this is for projects that are less than $1 million, don't rise to the level of being capital projects. And then capital projects are those that are over a million. And again, we will be able to talk about those in just a couple of minutes. We have an aircraft registration program that I mentioned funds our capital projects and pilot registration, which goes to a good cause. It goes to Oregon, well, half the money goes to emergency management, Oregon Emergency Management, to help fund a search and rescue FTE. And we actually fund actual air searches. They go to Oregon Emergency Management. They approve it, and then they send it to us for payment out of the funds from that. Our org chart, we are a staff of 14, four managers. I have Brian Ginney, who's also here as our business manager, and Heather Peck, who's our planning and projects manager, and our state airports manager not here today. He's out sick. But we do quite a bit for the small amount of staff that we have. For budget risks, we don't really have budget risks, but we do. There are environmental factors, and I say we don't have budget risks because our revenue has been relatively stable over the past couple of years, and I'll talk quickly about when it hasn't been. This is a graph that kind of explains aviation in this state over the past several years. You recall that we had the financial crisis of 2008. You can see the result of that in 2009. The green here is operations. That's the number of aircraft flights. And the blue is the number of enplaned passengers that go on those flights. So if you look at what happened here, that we kind of fell off the table in 9 and 10, and then economic recovery started happening. And at first, we had a bigger increase in passengers than we had in aircraft operations. That increase in passengers continued even though the number of flights is down. And the reason for that is you never fly in an empty aircraft anymore. They're always completely full. And so you're seeing that reflection in reduced number of operations but increased number of passengers. And there are some increases in operations here, and this is mostly Port of Portland and Eugene and other commercial places when they've had an increase in operations. Maybe they've gotten a new customer. So very telling. And then this red line is our net revenue. This is how our revenue goes in the agency. Over 50% of our revenue comes from fuel tax. So you can see there's a little upturn where there's an upturn in 2016 between operations and embarked passengers. It's the operations, the fuel, that actually helps fund our agency. And then there's another environmental factor, and that's the change in pilot population. The pilot population for general aviation is reducing. They're aging out. The cost of fuel, the cost of training, the time to train, aircraft maintenance, has been gradually changing so that there are fewer young people coming into the aviation industry. In fact, it's so dramatic now that there is a huge shortage of pilots and mechanics, not just in this state, but nationwide. And then the other thing that's an environmental factor is there's kind of a paradigm shift taking place. There's a lot more unmanned aircraft systems out there than there ever were before. That's a very fast and upcoming thing. We have three test sites in the state, plus we have a significant number of businesses that operate here in the state on unmanned aircraft systems. There's more unmanned aircraft systems registered with the FAA right now than there are manned aircraft. It's probably doubled in the past 2 years.
Again, I want to interrupt. This is mostly for me to pander to Senator Hansel. The three sites where we're part of what's called the Pan-Pacific Test Range that allows Oregon to be party to integrating unmanned aerial platforms into our national airspace, the most aggressive is in Pendleton. And they are doing some astonishing work out there with an organization called Future Farm. They're looking at employing unmanned aerial platforms to reduce the amount of fertilizer, to maximize the use of water, and concomitantly use less. it is really extraordinary what's happening with technology and farming, and the showcase place for it is Pendleton. I was out there watching a group of these are it's a religious colony that farms about
Hutterites.
Stop me if I start lying. But they have about 5,000 acres, and watching the patriarch of this family, a quite elderly gentleman, pull his smartphone out of his pocket and turn on these pivots all over their property, and can monitor from his phone that the release head in pivot number 27 in this latitude and longitude is plugged up with something, and he dispatches somebody to go out and fix it. But the revolution in farming, and particularly using these unmanned aerial systems, is worth the trip to Pendleton to see it. It is extraordinary. Representative Bird.
Thank you. Simple question is, do we get any revenue off these drones that are registered compared to manned aircraft?
Chair Johnston, Representative Reardon, for this agency, we are required by another House bill from 3 years ago to start registering public use only drones in the state starting in 2016. We have about 75 registered, so it's not really moving the needle a whole lot, but I see that increasing. As far as revenue in the state, with about 200 companies in the state, I suspect that there is a substantial amount that is happening now. In situ, for example, is on the Washington side of Hood River, mm-hmm. but there's about 300 or 400 jobs on the Oregon side as well working for in situ. And then there's satellite industries there and in other places that are making engines, that are doing software, and doing all sorts of different ancillary services related to drones.
Pendleton has just recruited a platform that is owned by Yamaha with all of the intellectual property that comes with it. A pilot has moved his whole family to Pendleton from Virginia. These are high wages with research contracts that go with. Ultimately, in my opinion, the state is a beneficiary when we start being a welcoming home to these companies that are producing the intellectual property that will cause engineers to come here, particularly in egg production and egg packaging. So is there a direct pecuniary result, de minimis? Is there an ancillary pecuniary result? Astronomical.
Chair Johnston, Representative Reardon, I think that there is now getting a lot of traction at all three of the test sites. They're starting to get a lot more businesses. 2 years ago, I don't think we were quite on the map nationally. I think we're on the map nationally, and there are companies that want to take advantage of the variation in terrain and the kind of wide open spaces that are available here in Oregon. So I think we are on the edge of something big, and I hope we can continue it.
If you'll allow me to amplify just a little bit, the reservation, the Warm Springs, have carved out a niche for themselves in firefighting. And having been one of those pilots in a former life that was out working on fires, I would much rather send an unmanned aerial platform into a fire than me. But they are doing power line patrol and wildland firefighting. The range in Tillamook that's in my district has for the last 20 years been sending devices to the literal edge of space. They are high-altitude balloons that are doing all kinds of research. Some of it is secret DOD kind of research. But I don't know if any of you watched with interest the fellow that went up to 120,000 feet and stepped out of a perfectly good flying platform. Folks in Tillamook worked on that device. And so these are little known. And then Pendleton, of course, in the very cutting edge of agribusiness. These are little known activities that Oregon is engaged in that puts us in the forefront globally of the technology of unmanned aerial machines. There has been a propensity in this building to view drones as bad. Drone equals weaponized equals death. And the real fact of the matter is drone equals agricultural applications equals money. And I think we have to resist the tendency to stomp this nascent industry to death with an overreaching regulatory environment as we're just getting started and trying to recruit these companies to come here, because this is a cluster of like-minded companies in each other's supply chain, and we want to have that flourish and continue to develop.
Great.
And Chair Johnson, there's actually a stakeholders work group that meets on a fairly regular basis that includes, you know, cross-section of industry, law enforcement, state government, ACLU participates, even lobbyists from Amazon and Google participate to try to work on maybe looking at legislation and other things in the state on how to make the industry work and still protect privacy and provide due process. So that stakeholder work group here has been, I think, pretty effective in working together on all sides of the issue.
Thank you. Yeah. Please continue.
I have a slide here. You saw the graph in red on a previous slide here, but this is a contrast between the GA community and the JET community here. And I'm going to use this right here. This red line is the JET fuel that's sold in the state dating back to 2006 through 2016. And the blue line is AVGAS, the general aviation population. And the scales are completely different. Here on the right side is the AVGAS that's sold. And you can notice that it's in the millions, 4 million at the high end and down to 2.5 million at the low end. But if you look at the number of gallons of jet fuel, it's significantly higher. So the trend here, as I talked about, was the recession here, and then you have an uptick in jet fuel sales in 2016. But you can also see that the glide slope of the AVGAS line is a kind of a steady decline, and that's just a reflection of the industry, the general aviation industry. The traditional GA pilot that flies the 172, there are just not as many of them anymore, and they're either aging out of the population or we're not seeing any new people come into the system. Major changes in our agency. Going back to 1113, we were moved our central services from DAS to ODOT in 2011. We had a little bit of a financial crisis back then that kind of coincides with the decline in fuel that you saw on those previous charts.
Mr. Director, how's that working out for you?
Quite, Chair Johnson, it actually works out quite well. I think we've kept our nose clean, and we haven't had any financial improprieties or anything like that over the time.
I was mostly worried about if ODOT's treating you well or if there's any price gouging going on. And, colleagues, this draws on a long history I have when ODOT used to do aeronautics books, and they would take withdrawals out of Aero's account and not tell us. So I'm trying to figure, that was in the dark old days, I'm trying to figure out, has the price been satisfactory? Is the service satisfactory?
Chair Johnson, I think it's fair and equitable. I watch carefully to see what DAS service charges are versus ODOT's. I'm on the Human Resources Customer Utility Board, where we help to set the rates. And I think we're fair and equitable there. As far as working with ODOT, I think both of us, our agency and theirs, have worked very hard to make it a compatible relationship in central services. And I think for the most part, it's been very positive.
Thank you.
Also in that biennium, the FAA increased the grant match from 5% to 10%. So that basically doubled the skin in the game required by each individual airport. We started this SCIP program, the one that I mentioned the FAA wanted us to do, and I think that's paid off tremendously for the state. Our coordinator has done a masterful job of working with the FAA and individual airports and a lot of small communities. They don't have a dedicated airport manager, so having somebody that can help with the expertise and grant management, I think, has been very useful. And we also have the ability, because FAA dollars are only good for 4 years, and if an airport doesn't have a project or maybe can't afford a project, then if they didn't find a way to spend that revenue, it would go back to the FAA, and we would see it again maybe in a very smaller and much reduced amount. So what our coordinator does is help to work to actually trade with other airports, either on a payback basis, and sometimes the FAA doesn't require it, but we actually keep money in the state and not have it leave the state by having our coordinator work with individual airports in the airport to make sure that the oldest money gets used first in the state. And I know we've kept at least $1 million in the state by not having it go back to the FAA. In the current biennium, 15-17, we got the 2075 jet and fuel and avgas fuel tax increase, and that, I think, is working very well. FAA is also going to fund, or has funded, a new modal transportation plan for aviation. So we got the first tranche of that last session. It's part of our budget for this session for the remaining dollar amount for that. And then we have the test sites that we talked about, located Pendleton, Warm Springs, and Tillamook. And we talked about how they increase, or they actually have stimulated growth here in the aviation community just based on the work that they're doing. To contain costs and improve programs, we work as closely as we can with other agencies. We've worked very well with Business Oregon. We help to stand up and work closely with the Oregon Aviation Industry Cluster, which has their own board of directors now. We work with the Unmanned Aerial Vehicle Consortium, and we've also, with FAA funding, done an economic study of the value of aviation in the state. And I think in our annual report you'll see some numbers on the front. Those are the results of that study that was done by Mead and Hunt. SCIP program we've talked about. We talked about essential services. And then this year we'll be doing a study of our role and mission, and I think that's going to pave the way for the future of the department and maybe our role in that aviation for the next 10 years. And then we have the policy option package 100, abolishment of state pilot registration. It's never been popular with the pilot community. We have, I know, an increase in drone registrations coming, so we can offset the loss of pilot registration with increases in aircraft registration, particularly in the drone community. And then, as I mentioned before, we don't have people that pull over pilots and say license and registration. So it is really a law of diminishing returns chasing registrations when their registration is not visible and we don't have an opportunity to chase them down.
Madam Chair.
Representative Meek.
Thank you. Just a quick question on the part of the real estate industry has drone flyover videos and pictures being taken. And there's a terminology called a Section 333 waiver. And so, and part of that, I guess part of the experience, you have to have a pilot's license to fly these unmanned aerial systems. What is the potential for, you know, I guess, development or entry into this industry for folks that may not necessarily have the means or resources to get their pilot's license, but maybe want to do some of this commercial work?
And Chair Johnson, Representative Meek, that's actually changed. The 333 exceptions were based on a 2012 FAA reauthorization bill, and that was an exception to a policy that they didn't have. They've since put a policy in place called Part 107. So they've made it much easier to get a drone pilot's license. It doesn't have to be you don't have to have a manned aircraft pilot's license. But you do have to have this drone pilot's license. So Part 107 is for commercial operators, like real estate operators like that, can get a Part 107. There's still an exception, but it has more to do with exceptions to whether they're larger than 55 pounds, which is the threshold for the FAA between large and small unmanned aircraft systems. So it's become much easier for a realtor like that to operate under Part 107.
Follow up.
I see a new career opportunity.
Yeah. But related to that, so that if they're going to be licensed, though, right, so will they be licensed at the state level or just the federal level?
And Chair Johnson, Representative Meek, they would be licensed at the federal level. So the FAA is the one that provides that. There are companies here in the state that offer training courses. As a matter of fact, there's some of our staff here have gone and gotten that drone license, drone operator's license here. David Astorga over here is one of our staff, and he's gone through that training.
Okay, great to hear.
But we don't have a state licensing because the FAA already does it. Kind of a duplication.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
So our major budget information, construction projects, I mentioned GA entitlements for things that are not greater than $1 million. And so we have a policy option package with that. Just very quickly, I'll just show you some of the things that are on that. It's master plans, obstruction removal, things that don't rise to the level of $1 million. They're not capital projects. And then we have capital projects as well. And we have four that will be in this biennium. Runway renovation and lighting, $2 million plus at McDermott. Band and obstruction removal, fencing, electrical upgrades, Chiloquin taxiway renovation. We renovated the runway a couple of years ago, but there wasn't funding to do the taxiway. That'll be done. Same thing with Lebanon. We renovated the runway a couple of years ago. Now we'll be going back and doing the taxiway and parking aprons. And then,
question. Representative Rudin.
So I'm new to this, so forgive me. And if this turns out to be a 10-minute answer, don't answer it. We'll talk offline. But I'm guessing you had more than five construction projects on your list. Could you explain to me a little bit about the prioritization process that you go through and how that works here? It's
Chair Johnson, Representative Reardon. For prioritization of projects, we work with the FAA. We have a five-year capital improvement plan that we review and evaluate and update every year. Their highest priority is for runways and infrastructure related to runways. So we have a pavement maintenance program that also includes an evaluation, and there's a pavement condition index that's done by an independent consultant that evaluates the pavement and assigns a numerical grade to it. So that's how we prioritize, trying to take the oldest and most deteriorated pavement first to determine which runways we need to renovate, which taxiways, and that sort of thing.
So you have criteria and you can measure things.
Representative Reardon, that's correct. It's fairly rigid.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Very helpful.
So in the requirements for the presentation today, these are our pots of money, if you will. So operations other funds, that's non-federal funded. Operations federal funds, the FAA funding. The search and rescue program, which is a very small piece of what we do. GA entitlement, you see that much bigger because that reflects in the last 2 years the addition of the fuel tax revenue, that's state money. The fuel tax revenue that we are getting ready to give out grants for. And then federal funds, GA entitlement, we've had a slight uptick in that. Pavement maintenance program has been fairly consistent over the past couple of years. And aircraft registration, which is also other funds dollars. That's the collection of the revenue for aircraft registration that pays for our federal projects. And then cap construction, other funds, is money that goes to our grant match for FAA grants, and then cap construction federal funds is the actual grant money from the FAA. And a summary of revenues. The increase in operations dollars here reflects the increase in fuel tax revenue from House Bill 2075. And then you can see all the other line items right here. If there are any questions on any of those, I'd be happy to go into.
Questions, colleagues? Please continue.
Okay, these are the legislation that we have. Of course, the 5504 is the hearing we're having today to talk about our budget. The cap construction bill, we always have a piece in that, and these are the four projects that we have, we already talked about. And then the Senate Bill 27, which is the abolition of state pilot registration, it's been to the Senate Transportation Committee, came out with a due pass with a referral to Ways and Means. I suspect it'll come here next. And other legislation, just to give you a little bit here, the Connect Oregon bonds, there's a bill for unmanned aircraft systems that allows law enforcement to investigate unlawful taking of wildlife. There's a bill, actually two bills, to create a separate airport authority for Hillsborough and Troutdale, not favored by the Port of Portland. There is an increase in aviation fuel tax for aviation-related STEM training. Our bill abolishing pilot and aircraft registration. There's a bill that has a hearing on the 15th on prohibiting the sale of leaded avgas after January 21st, 2022.
Colleagues, that would be a lovely bill if such a product existed. It will ground U.S. aviation in Oregon.
There is a plan by the FAA to replace leaded avgas. It's supposed to start taking effect in 2018, but I suspect the FAA will phase that in over several years, so that bill may have some unintended consequences, as Senator Johnson said, if it affects the ability to fly with leaded avgas. It's out there only because there is no replacement. The FAA already has a plan to replace it. It's just not going as quickly as we would all like to see it go. There's another bill, Senate Bill 189, that establishes a legislative task force on the benefits of airport subsidies, and another bill on prohibition of leaded avgas on the Senate side. And then there may be a couple of other unmanned aircraft systems bills based on what I've heard in the stakeholders meeting, but I don't know if they've dropped yet. In the appendices, any changes to our budget impact on operations, I would just tell you that House Bill 2075 has been an enormous change. 2 cents of jet fuel, 2 cents of avgas, 50% goes to the grants that are in the priority here, 25% to assist rural air service. We've been working with a lot of communities and organizations to try to figure out how to do that. We've been out to John Day and had several meetings with the local communities out there. We've met with the Coast. We work with the Oregon Aviation Industry Cluster. And then we have 25% of that revenue is also for the maintenance and safety of our own state-owned airports that are not federally funded. We have put very little money into them over the past several years. So that 2075 benefit is going to really help those non-federally funded airports. Again, these are our capital construction projects. And then the last slide that I have is our ending balance form. And this kind of gives you an idea. I'm very comfortable with the ending balances we expect to have in 17-19. We would like to have a minimum of $550,000 there. We're hovering right at $1 million in our current balance right now. We expect it to drop no lower than $875,000 for operations, which is the one fund that I really think has the potential to get us in trouble. The rest of them are all fairly statutory in nature. And subject to any questions, that concludes my presentation.
This final picture is a very big deal. That's the tower at Aurora. And that would not be there had it not been for Director Schweckert's dogged stick-to-itness. That project had more lives than a cat, and every time it looked like it wasn't going to happen, Director Schweckert forced it back on track. And that is the largest single safety improvement at that airport, as well as noise abatement, and it is testimony to this director's skill that it exists. Representative Reardon.
Well, thank you. I thought it was a lighthouse in Gomberg's district. So, glad you explained that. But I was really sleepy this morning, and I was reading one of the memos on the train down, and it mentioned non-traditional
air service.
Yes. Could you explain what that is? That the same as unmanned aircraft? Or
Chair Johnson, Representative Reardon, what that means is that for traditional commercial air service, like what you see out of PDX or Eugene, it's very tough in rural parts of the state, and this is not just a state issue, this is a national issue, is there's a reduction in the types of traditional commercial air service that are available. The airlines have a pilot shortage. They're going to larger aircraft. which means increased numbers of seats, so small communities are sort of being left out. So for us to do commercial air service, we have to look at a different model. And so that's what we've been trying to do. That's what makes this so hard, is trying to get rural air service authorized. If you know what's happened at Pendleton, they have a 9-seat airplane. They struggled a little bit to fill it. Seaport Airlines and several others that serve small communities went into bankruptcy. They were replaced by boutique airlines, which I think is off to a pretty good start. But what we looked at is, could we do anything to help with this funding to develop a non-traditional air service? And we've talked a lot in the past year or so about what that might look like. Would it look like Uber? Is it marketing dollars? And so what we're doing right now is working with communities and the organizations like Aravi to try to find the best possible way forward to serve the small communities in Oregon on commercial air service.
Representative Comer.
Well, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I just wanted the record to reflect that our lighthouses have bigger lamps on top than these do.
Any other questions for Director Schwecker? All right. With that, we'll hear from the Chief Financial Officer. I keep wanting to call you BAM, and you're not anymore. Ms. Witkind.
Yes, let me just get this slideshow brought up here.
I might add, while she's teeing up her performance, that Director Schwecker has aviation experience in the military, and we appreciate your service to our country.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Johnson, Co-Chair Gomberg, members of the committee. My name is Linnea Whittakin, and I'm with the DAS Chief Financial Office. Today I have just a brief presentation for you highlighting some aspects of the governor's budget. As the agency has already gone through, policy option package 100 and Senate Bill 27 abolishes pilot registration. Pilot registration fees have been used to fund the search and rescue, and that will now be funded out of the aircraft registration. So they'll continue to fund that, but out of a different fund. This next slide here represents the agency's expenditure history. The governor's budget makes several investments in capital projects and general aviation entitlement projects. What you see here is a slight increase from 15-17 to 17-19, and that's reflective of those investments. These investments are made possible by the 2-cent jet fuel tax increase from 2015. The increase in FTE is also attributable to the jet fuel increase. They needed an additional FTE to fund or to manage the grant program. As you can see here, the biggest piece of aviation's budget is in services and supplies. The driver behind this is the 10% grant match that Director Swecker's been talking to you about. And again, just a recap of the investments. There's four capital construction projects that he's gone through, as well as 5 general aviation entitlement projects. With that, if you have any questions, I can answer them now or through the committee.
Colleagues, questions? I don't think there are any. Thank you for your presentation. All right. The spirit of testimony has moved to no one, and so we have no people desiring to testify on this budget. Mr. Jolivet, any concluding remarks from you? Okay. Would you Senator Hansel?
I have a question maybe of the chair, if you are comfortable opining on it. Senate Bill 27, have you taken a position on that?
I have. This is the abolishment of the pilot registration. I think that's a very good thing for a variety of reasons. The feds, the FAA, used to be the state's partner in matching these, so enforcement was a lot easier. And then they stopped making their lists available. Now, I always thought the pilot registration was a good thing because for a de minimis amount of money, you guaranteed that if you were overdue or on the side of Mount Jefferson, somebody would come and look for you. But the squeeze stopped being worth the juice. We spent so much time chasing the pilots that would not register that it has become an enormous burden. It is easier to correlate aircraft with their registration fees than it is to chase scofflaw pilots. I'm embarrassed to say that for this small amount of investment, the pilot community guaranteed themselves that somebody would come and hunt for them if they got lost. That's been a little bit commingled with hunting for mushroom hunters that the pilots don't feel a responsibility to pay for. But the long and the short of it is I'm very supportive, and I'll miss writing that check for, what, $48 every 2 years. That's how small a fee this is. But I think this is a much more efficient, much less annoying to the pilot community methodology, and I would hope that you would all consider Senate Bill 27 favorably when it comes to a floor near you.
Thank you.
Did I lie about anything, Mr. Director?
That's very accurate, and I think we can reallocate the FTE resource. We have 0.5 FTE. We often use two or three people to chase the pilot registration. I think we can better use that resource to other things, including the increase in drone registrations as well.
And you heard it from this agency first. This is actually an agency that's reducing fees on Oregonians. All right. Anything for the good of the order? Nope. Colleagues, anything that any of you wish to offer for the good of the order? There being none? We're adjourned.